Please turn in your copy of God's Word to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4. So what does your Christianity look like to you? Is it marked by calm, trusting assurance and confidence that is believing and obeying with an eye on heaven? Or is it marked by frantic doing that looks and feels like, well, maybe a hamster on its exercise wheel, round and round and round, but never finished? In essence, does your Christianity look like you trust God to save you, or you trust that God will save you and you're working really, really hard to get there? Does your Christianity feel like a performance track? I want God to be happy with me, and the way that He is happy with me is when I am doing. Because after all, that's the way it is with my kids. That's the way it usually is with my spouse. It certainly is the way it is at work. So why would it be any different with God? And that's not a small mistake. That's not going to be a get to heaven oops. The difference between the two is a matter of the heart. It is a matter of believing in an obeying way that really trusts God's promises until we arrive to heaven. Or, though we have faith, we are adding in and mixing in our works so that we think then we have earned in some way God's smile. In all of this, in verse 1 of Hebrews, there is a warning that we must heed. Now, we once lived in a little village of Dalzell, Illinois. And yes, it's as small as it name sounds. I think there were like 600 people. It was very small. And the east side of our village was bordered by a highly trafficked road that was called Meridian Road. And just north of us was the interstate, and there was a road that teed into, like an access road that ran along the side of the interstate. Now, when we first moved there, there was just a stop sign and this, you know, T warning you, you're going to have to turn. And people ran through it all the time. We could tell because the guardrail was perpetually new that they were running into. Had no chance to rust. Well, then several large signs went up and people still ran through it. Then they put out, oh, I hated these. Those irritating thrummers on the road, you know? Vroom, 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 vroom. And amazingly, a couple of people still ran into it. Because this road before the interstate used to go through, but not anymore. This verse ought to come to us like large signs and unnerving strips in the road to alert us that there is a danger ahead. Verse 1, Hebrews chapter 4. Therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. This verse could have been easily translated this way. Let us fear, therefore, lest being left with the promise to enter God's very own rest, any of you seems to not come into it or to come short of it. And what's the imagery? Israel, standing at Kadesh Barnea, ready to enter the land, God's promise. And they didn't believe his promise and they didn't enter. They spent 40 years of chastening and disobedience. So here's the word of warning. And it's strange, isn't it, a little bit? That with all of the Bible's warnings to us not to fear, this is a warning to fear. That should make you stop and go, what? Now, this is not a phobia. Phobia is an unreasonable or irrational fear of something. And so we can think of claustrophobia. I'm always interested how they're going to do this. So it's spelled right. Claustrophobia and arachnophobia and hydrophobia. And there are paralyzing, crushing fears of small spaces, spiders, and water. The fear we are warned here is the opposite. It is a rational, thought-out fear that comes from seeing a desperate danger ahead. It is not some inner sense of creepy crawly that comes with soft, squishy bodies and hairy legs. It is the sense of careful caution that comes from bright yellow and red signs, and the thrumming from our tires should cause us to take our foot off the gas and put on the brake and look earnestly ahead, for we are at a place where many have failed to heed the warnings and have made desperate crash of their lives. And here it is. Here's the reason for that warning. There is a promised rest that we can miss. Now, our author is going to unpack the three aspects of this statement, which will concern us as well. I want you to note them. First, there is a rest for us. Secondly, that rest is related to promises. And thirdly, it is possible to come short of entering the rest. Now, we are used, and here's for our Bible study workshop, folks, we are used to thinking of this rest as being heaven. And the promised land of Israel was always equated in older writings with heaven. And so we cross the Jordan to reach heavens, right? Except when you study your Bible carefully, it's not the way it works. Because it's possible to enter into that rest today. And today, do not harden your hearts lest you fail to enter that rest. Today. Huh. So what is this rest? It's for us. It's related to promises. And it's possible to miss it. Now remember that the text was originally addressed to Jewish converts who are facing the temptation of going back to Judaism in order to avoid the pressures and persecutions they were facing. They had borne well so far, but the prospects were dimming by the moment. There are lots of pressures on us that are similar. Not to go back to Judaism, but rather to revert to a performance way of living rather than a resting way of living. How do you enter into the rest today? By trust, by belief, that rest entirely on God, and then, having now entered His rest, that is the promised land, you fight the battles, you build the cities, you conquer the lands, you do what you do. But you do because you're there, not in order to get there. So now, you're going to have to stop and sort of lean back a little bit and flush and lean forward and put some new stuff in. Because this is jarring. This is not the way we normally think. The rest is heaven, and I could fail to enter heaven. Except, now, today, you want to go home today? Yeah, well, some do. So there's a principle then that we need to understand, and I've already given you sort of a preview of it in verses 2 through 3. Gives us a simple principle by which we enter God's rest and to avoid falling short of it and returning, in fact, to the wilderness. For, verse 2, good news came to us just as to them. Don't you love the way he did that? See, they had good news. What was the good news? The good news was the promise. But the message they heard did not benefit them because they were not united by faith with those who listened. Now, that doesn't say what nearly 80% of my commentaries say. Look at it carefully. It did not benefit them because they were not united by faith with those who listened. It doesn't say that they didn't have faith and therefore didn't listen. They weren't in union with those. For we who have believed enter the rest, as he said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest, although his works were finished from the foundation of the world. Now here's its historical background. He neatly ties together, our author does, the situation of the Jews and Moses and in his own day. It could have easily been translated, we have both been thoroughly good-newsed. In other words, if they failed to enter the rest, it's not because they didn't know better. And we, all of us, the Jews of Moses' day, the converts of the author's day, and us today have been thoroughly good-newsed. And the message of the promises of God and the evidences of the power of God are on public display in the Word and the lives of transformed men and women. And therefore, entering rest is a matter of believing, huh, the gospel. Who knew? And if you are running on your Christianity, and it's all by works, and it's all by doing, so that God is happy with you, it's a gospel problem. It's a promise problem. The problem with the Jews of Moses' day was that they did not hear the message with faith, with belief, and therefore they were not with those who actually listened or actually heard with faith. And that becomes your challenge today. You're sitting in this room. Maybe you're listening to this over MP3 and over the internet. But the question is, are you united by faith with those who are hearing by faith? Do you hear this in a way that gets you off the performance track and puts you on the trusting and resting? And so that though you are working hard out of your faith, you are not working hard for your faith. Well, the obstacles were huge, right? The problems were great. Got to cross a river, giants, Nephilim, huge cities, and we're grasshoppers. But notice its biblical expression in verse 3. We who have believed enter that rest. Present tense. Now, to many of us, this is an accepted dictum of Christian doctrine. To enter God's rest, we must believe. Believe us is entering. But I wonder if we could interview the Israelites that stood on the edge of Canaan, if they would say, I believe that God is going to give us the promised land, but since it's impossibly hard now, I will not go in. And this is exactly what we do today. I believe God's promise of whatever it may be, yet, it's impossibly difficult now, so I won't do this. Which means, you don't believe the promise. Believing in the Bible is never mere mental assent to truth. It's embracing the truth with our minds and our wills and affections. Believing hears God's promises and sees what they promise to bring, value it as God's, understands the obstacles, but trusts God for it. That is faith. That is the believing that enters rest. And it's just a simple question. Do you believe in a way that looks like rest? Or do you believe in a way that looks like frantic performance work? Now, I'm not saying that we should not and do not. We have been saved for good works. Don't mishear me here. But I'm convinced that many of us, and I grew up on a performance Christianity, that many of us work really hard at what we're doing because deep in our hearts, we're not resting in God's promises. We are working for God's smile. Well, the Jews associated this rest with land and kingdom and temple. We tend to argue whether it is heaven or salvation or the victorious Christian life. In doing so, we have, all of us, missed the point of the argument. So verses 4 to 8, and here is an argument then to follow. Now, the intricate logic of this paragraph can be like a Rubik's Cube. We are not people given to listening to tightly logic, particularly this way. I suspect that here it is true for us. The paragraph is a marvelous example of intricately argued rhetoric that we go, moving on. I don't get it. We're not used to following such detail in our process of thinking today. Now, some of you are familiar with satellite navigation systems for airplanes. Sometimes now in cars they even have this, where you can put in waypoints. You can say, I'm going to here, but I want to go through here, and I want to go through here, and I want to go through here. That's a relatively new thing in automobiles, but in airplanes it was very common. And sometimes that route can be complicated and difficult, but knowing where the waypoints are helps a lot. And so what I want to do as I work through this is I want to break down the waypoints. And I think it'll make the path easier to follow. Here's what our author writes. For, so we're getting an explanation, he has somewhere spoken of the seventh day in this way. God rested on the seventh day from all his works. God was tired. He was worn out. It had taken him 6 days to do all this. You think? And again, in this passage, he said, they shall not enter. What's the preposition? What's the pronoun? My rest. Not their rest. They don't enter my rest. You hear a biblical theological argument developing? God rests. They didn't enter my rest. Since, therefore, it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience, again, he appoints a certain day called, tell me, today, saying through David so long afterwards in the words that are already quoted, today. If you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. And that quote goes on to say, and not enter my rest. For, if Joshua had given them rest, so now he shifts us to the end of the 40 years, God would not have spoken another day later on through David and now through the preacher of Hebrews. So, here are your waypoints. Maybe this will help. First, there is a rest of God at creation. God's rest is not related to Canaan. It's not related to temple. It is like God's rest at creation. God's rest came because the work was done. Genesis 2 through 3, 1 through 3 emphasizes the completeness of the work, so there is a finality to the rest. Verse 6, that rest was not entered under Moses. Although God entered his rest, they never entered the land, they never entered the rest. So under the Mosaic covenant, the rest was not entered. Therefore, the rest is remaining. The rest was available in David's day. Verse 7, now they're already in the land, folks, right? Back where at the culmination, they're living through the fulfillment. The Abrahamic promise and the promise of the land. But they were still being offered rest and warned that not entering rest in David's day, Psalm 95, even though they were in the land. So even though the Mosaic and the Davidic covenants were being fulfilled, there was still a rest to be entered. Why? Because the work wasn't finished. The Redeemer had not come. He had not, on a tree, many thousand years later, said, it is finished. Here's the theology of rest. This is for free. It's not in my notes. God worked and rested. Man sinned and fell, and God went back to work till Jesus died and said, "It is finished." And the resurrection life is rest. And it will begin then, and it begins in each and you through the new birth, and it will reach its culmination, the new heavens, the new earth, in which righteousness dwells, and the regeneration is brought to completion. So the rest was available in David's day. And the rest was not by Joshua in Canaan. Even though Joshua brought them into the land, that was not all the rest involved. God marked out a time in David's day, generations later, called today, when the rest is still available, and the author is saying the rest is still available today. Okay, what's the point? God's rest is marked by the completion of the work. So why are you on the treadmill trying to work for God's smile? It is finished. The work is done. Stop trying and live in trust. If God's rest is marked by completeness and finality, neither of which were experienced by Israel in any point in its redemptive history, and if that rest is still being offered anytime it is today, then we can only reach a very powerful and wonderful conclusion in verses 9 and 10. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest. One word, sabbatismos, for the people of God. For whoever has entered in God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his own. Now, I want to point out the phrase here, Sabbath rest, is the only way to translate it into English. It's one word. It's not the word used for rest anywhere else, neither in this book nor in the whole Bible. It is the only time in all the Bible this word occurs, which means it's unique. To argue, as many do, that we therefore have Sabbath keeping in the church is to utterly miss the point. Sabbath keeping is, guess what? Works. It's Mosaic covenant. It's in the land. And it's impossible. Thank God. Thank God. It is finished. It is finished. Well, now we have a very important question. If we have a rest left over for us that is like God's rest in creation, and it is constantly being offered to God's people in the flow of life, what is that rest? Well, God's rest is all that God is for us in Christ, made available by believing and obeying his promises until they are all completely fulfilled in eternity. Do you believe that? Have you entered into that rest? See, it is possible to be a Christian and fail to fully enter into that rest. Moses was a believer. Moses went 40 years in the wilderness. Moses only saw the promised land. He never entered it. Are we then saying Moses isn't a Christian? That Moses isn't going to heaven? No. No. So it is possible for you to believe God in a saving way and then, in effect, to live like that isn't really true, as though you're still working, as though you're still creating, as though you're still making, as though somehow, some way, all your tap dancing to religious music is in some way making God smile. And he goes, "I don't look at my son, I look at your wonderful little works, tap dance, and welcome." Oh, brothers and sisters, I look at the cross. I hear it is finished. I see an empty tomb. I have been thoroughly then good newsed. And since I've been thoroughly good newsed, then I am living and working and serving and maybe even diligently, and I may even die. But I don't do it to get God's smile, but because God has smiled on Jesus and has accepted his work and has been satisfied at the travail of his soul. And so the travails of my soul are an outworking, not an working for. Well, I want to move on to verse 11. So what is our responsibility if this is the rest? All the promises that God has given to us, that we enter to by believing them, it causes us to settle in a sense before him. Well, there's an exhortation to obey. Let us therefore strive to enter the rest. Isn't that interesting? Oops. You do read your Bible in a way that goes, didn't he say not to do this? Make every effort to enter the rest so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. Same sort of disobedience. What? Well, they didn't believe and therefore they disobeyed. Actually, the verses are flipped. They disobeyed and didn't enter the land. And they did so, they didn't enter the land because they disobeyed. Disbelief and disobedience in the context. So what we must do, make every effort. Be diligent. Are you bending every fiber of your being to believe God? Or are you bending every fiber of your being to try to work to please God? Do we take the Bible's promises, which are envelopes and in which there are so many things that God has promised to us, and some of those are addressed to particular groups of people, but on the outside, it's God's promise. We open them and we take them out and, oh, this is lovely, this is beautiful, we put it away. And secondly, why we must do it. So that we do not fall by the same example of disobedience. This is the same word as in chapter 3, verse 17. It conveys the picture of being strewn across the wilderness. There are lots of living people sitting in congregations today who actually look like wilderness-strewn carcasses because they're working and working and working and working, and they're never entering into the rest. That is the outflow of believing promises. So let's think about this together as we wrap it up. First, in the particulars of our situation, this principle holds true. We must believingly obey to enter the rest of God's promises. Have you? Do you? Are you still living on a performance track? Or is your work in the Lord look like resting on the Lord? Does it look like trust? Does it flow out of? Symptom? Good day, bad day. Oh, today I had a good day. Great devotions. Minimal sin, wonderful prayer time, great phone call, God answered my prayer and I found my car keys. Great day, bad day, skip devotions, God seemed distant, asked God for help with my work and got an F, bad day. You hear it? And I could multiply things like that. So what applications can we make? First, let's hold fast to our profession of faith. Let's believe God's promise of salvation in an obeying way. Let's not go back to Egypt or former religious beliefs or pagan practices. Let us hold fast. because that's part of the exhortation in these larger context. Secondly, let's believe God's promises for our every moment, for every today, and do so in an obeying way. Let us understand that the descriptions of God's promises, let's embrace their delights, let's follow their directions, and anticipate their future fulfillments. And let us in our salvation and in our transformation rest in what Christ has completed for us. Let's stop working to earn the benefits of God's promises. Let us be diligent to enter the benefits that Christ has already earned for us. We embrace the cross for our salvation, but we turn away from it to almost everything else beyond the wicket gate. And let us press forward in spite of giants and castles and obstacles and problems, because God has said he will do it, and wine and milk and honey of that land are just ours for believing obedience right now. Right now. Any day that you can say today, enter the rest by believing God's promises. Do not harden your heart. Be with those who are listening by faith. And join the happy band of heavenly travelers who are resting in his promises. From Psalm 95, verses 6 and 7. Which are the basis for our author's text. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. There is rest. Father, help us to enter into that rest. Help us to fear lest we fall short of it because of our performance tracks and our hard work. And help us to strive to enter into that rest. And then may all that we do in the midst of that rest flow from believing trust and knowing that we have your pleasure because you have been satisfied with Jesus. And all God's people said.